rise and shine. It's a great day in the North Woods.
On today's show, I'm joined by Charlie Turbo Erdman, whose grandparents, Charlie and Mim Erdman, founded camp. Charlie's dad, John, and Aunt Deb have owned and operated camp since 1984. Charlie has spent almost every summer at camp since he was born in Ely back in the 1980s. He and his wife, Ashley, have four boys who attend camp. So I guess you could say that with four boys of your own and growing up at a boys' summer camp, you've learned a thing or two about raising boys?
I would say that I'm getting better at it these days over time.
How do you think parenting has changed in the last 20 years?
Well, that's a big question, but I guess the thing that is most apparent to me seems to be the kids have all this access to information out there that they're a lot more in tune or aware of their feelings and their emotions. And then, you know, culture has changed a lot over the last 20 years, again, with this awareness of all the feelings and emotions and, you know, racial context. And, you know, they know so much more about their feelings and the kids. You have to be so much more specific about what and why it is you want to accomplish with them. They have these kind of predetermined ideas in their minds about every little thing you're doing. For me, it's all just like these kids got too much info, bro. There's too much out there. They think they know too much. They have access to too much, and they're just missing the chance to be kids.
So it wasn't like that when you were growing up?
I don't feel like it was. You know, we were just kind of out playing and having fun. And, you know, parents kicked you out of the house and you ran out there and you kind of figured it out on your own. But, you know, we didn't have all this information at our hands. All this, I guess I consider it a little bit of white noise about how things are supposed to be.
I've also heard you mention before the kids don't want to climb Mount Everest because they've seen it on YouTube and they're not that impressed.
Well, that is, I do remember saying that. And I do think that that's true. It's just, they have access to all this stuff online, all this context about what their beliefs are and how they're feeling. And they just have to be handled with kids' gloves, I feel like now. You know, another thought that crossed my mind was how I think these days you don't get to tell a kid no. You don't get to do that. You have to say, well, I'd rather you didn't do that. Would you please not do that? You know, instead of just kind of being told what to do, it has to be a kind of a discussion, a conversation about it, so that they sort of decide to make that decision on their own a little, as opposed to just being told what to do. I think that's a big change.
Do you think that's a change for the better or the worse?
Well, I do think that some discussion is good, but I guess it depends on the age. When they're kids, you can kind of get away with it. But the older they get, the more it becomes important to have that conversation with them. You know, you do want them making their own decisions in a way. But, you know, sometimes you do just want them to do what they're told. They don't need to necessarily understand why it's dangerous to climb on the rock. Although you'd think that they'd get it, but they still want to do it sometimes. And sometimes I just don't feel like we should have to have so much discussion about it, especially when you got, you know, when you're dealing with a group. I've got four boys. And so, you know, it's always several people there, and they're all different ages. And that's a lot like camp is, you know, you're always, you always got four or more guys, and you know, we're traveling through the woods, and you know, you want them to stay on the path and not run through the woods and get stabbed in the eye. And then, you know, they say, but we're playing a game of tag, and how are we going to do that without, you know? And it's like, listen, kid, I don't know, but stay on the path and don't get stabbed in the eye. It works. That's how it works.
How do you find that your kids are, because you brought all four of them up last year, and how are they at the beginning, say like day one, or even the day before you get to camp versus once you get them home? Do you see any differences?
Oh, absolutely. Every year, every kid, there's, you know, a level of engagement that happens at camp that you don't get back home very often. You know, maybe at the dinner table, if you make them put their phones down, you know, maybe on the soccer field when they're in the middle of a game, you know, when you're playing a game or coaching. But on the way into camp, you know, they're just in their own little worlds, no matter how much you are talking to them. It's hard to get much out of them. That, you know, it's like they don't have as much personality because they're kind of living in their own worlds with their own devices and their all their activities and school. And so, you know, at the end of the school year, you know, they want a couple days, a week or something like that without being in class and before you go to camp, and they just kind of do their own thing. And you, by the time you get to camp, you're kind of wondering what the kids, you know, what he's like these days. And you're about to find out because they get to camp and you know, they open up, they have to talk to people. It's all living in a group setting, and you know, they just really flourish there. Their personalities really flourish there. And by the end of camp, you know, it's a whole different kid, and in a good way. And you know, you think it's so great, and then you think it's going to stick, but you know,
how long does that last for?
It doesn't last long. A couple weeks, they get back to the grind, back to the regular thing. And they do grow along the way. You know, you see it. They're better the next, you know, they're better after camp and they stay better. But they do just kind of get back into that old routine, tend to get back into that old routine. And, you know, you kind of miss the kid that was at camp and wish you could get more of that. And as a parent, you may try and nurture that, but they are different. The first day of camp is, you know, everybody's a little awkward. You know, the first days of camp, everybody's a little awkward trying to get to know each other. And, you know, they're not used to looking each other in the eyes and speaking and having conversations. And, you know, now they speak in all these abbreviations and things like that. So the conversation takes a minute for the conversation to have, for there to be much meat on the bone in a conversation, you know,
social media jargon or lingo.
Yeah. Yeah. That's big. You know, I've got kids of all ages from 5 to 15, and you know, sometimes it's just like they're speaking another language. A cabin 8 was like that this year. That's the 14-year-olds. And I mean, I could sit there and listen to them for hours. Because, you know, it's funny, and they got a lot of personality by the time they've been there a few weeks. But you don't always necessarily understand what they're saying.
Yep, I've been there. Each year, too, has different.
Yeah, the lingo changes every year. That's right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they have all these things out there that they're thinking about and talking about, and you know, they're kind of predetermining they have this kind of like ideal of what it, you know, at early ages they have this kind of ideal of what it is they want to be or how they want to identify themselves. And you know, I don't feel like when we were kids we had so much of that predetermined in our minds or wasn't even on our radar. You know, we were just out playing, having fun. You know, we knew we liked soccer, you know, but we weren't too obsessed with, you know, how we were going to become the best soccer player ever. Or, you know, we definitely, I don't feel like we all had all this, you know, there wasn't anything, their anxiety wasn't a thing, you know, depression wasn't a thing. And now, you know, start talking to a kid and he'll say, well, my psychiatrist said this and my psychiatrist said that about me and I'm this way and I'm that way. And, you know, I didn't know how I was. I mean, I still don't know how I am.
I could tell you.
Well, yeah, I don't know that I like that part of it, how it's changed. I just feel like they're not kids for as long. You know, they are smarter, I think. I think that they're, you know, school's teaching, you know, second grade, they're teaching what I was learning in fifth grade, I think. And they are in tune with everything that's going on in the culture. I think there's a lot of like sensitivity training. And like I said earlier, you just, you know, you don't get to tell them no. You have to say, please don't do that if you don't mind. And then, you know, you got to explain why and discuss the consequences and provide other options. And, you know, it's just a little more complicated is all. But that's good. They're smarter and they're sharper. They're bigger. They're stronger. I think just physically, I think that's just kind of a natural thing that's happening. And, you know, but it's kind of like, I feel like they miss the chance to be a kid, miss out on the opportunity to be a kid sometimes.
You think that comes from the bombardment of information and social media and TV and
yeah, absolutely. I just, they've got all this
from parents or society.
Well, I think parents are more in tune with it too. You know, I'm a 46-year-old parent and I'm a little old school. And, you know, I think parents nowadays are very in tune with a kid. My kid has anxiety and my kid has this, my kid is like that. My kid is like this. And, I think that maybe they do kind of over address it and make it a bigger deal than it has to be for those guys. I don't think that they should be psychoanalyzing themselves at 12 years old,
putting themselves in a box.
Yeah, I think they really do. You know, I just think that stuff's just a little ridiculous. So I think there's all this information is out there and it's just filling their head with all these silly ideas, kind of, you know. They are smarter and stronger and, you know, they have access to all this information and know things. But, you know, I don't know that they're necessarily, experienced enough to take it all in and formulate a real opinion, you know, a real complex opinion about themselves. And like you said, they put themselves in a box. I think the parents are doing that a little more. They're, you know, they're telling the kid that he's like this and he's like that. And these younger parents, they're, you know, I don't think that they're quite qualified to decide that either. It takes, you know, you learn something new about parenting every day. And, you know, especially when you have more kids at different ages, as you see them develop, and the more that they decide they're like something, the more you see them become like that, even though they weren't. and so they're really making these decisions about their personality and character that, and predetermining it. And I wish that they would just kind of grow into it a little more than they do.
And they're super busy these days. They got school and sports. And when they're not doing that, they're in clubs and video games and.
Yeah. There's a thousand things going on. You know, I think half of parenting is taxiing kids around and dropping them off and picking them up. And then, you know, the other kid over here you got to go get him something at the store, and then you got to feed him. And, you know, I mean, it's just it's a bunch of just busy work, just getting them out there to do the things they want to do, which I think is good. But I do wish they'd just spend a little more time just playing.
Do you find convincing your boys to be without their phones and go to camp for 4 weeks difficult?
Yeah, absolutely. Every year it's a little bit of a battle. You know, the nice thing is that they forget about it pretty quickly when they get there. So that's good. But yeah, I guess, you know, the hard part is trying to decide how much to let them play on their phones and have technology. And, you know, it's so convenient to have the kid back there quiet playing on his phone, but it's also so hard to regulate what they're looking at. I mean, you really don't get to, even if you try to set all the settings and this, that, and the other, you just never know what they're going to see that you wish, you know, they can't unsee, and you wish you hadn't seen in the first place yet. You know, you're too little to see that or read that or be listening to that or whatever it is. I mean, the context of the conversations is not like it used to be. It's very, you know, charged with things that I would say maybe a little inappropriate and, you know, absolutely inappropriate for a lot of inappropriate stuff out there for these kids to be watching and listening to.
It also sometimes seems like what they say is secondhand. It's like they're talking, saying something, and it sounds like it's just something they heard on YouTube or something.
Oh yeah. I think
half their lingo and half their speech is secondhand.
I absolutely agree. You know, they're regurgitating, you know,
political opinions,
medical opinions. You know, I don't understand where they're getting it all and why they're listening to it all. You know, everything is a 5 minute, 2 minute snippet, and now they're an expert on it.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think parenting will be like in 20 years from now, in the future? Do you think the pendulum will swing the other way and we might become more rigid parents? Or
well, that's an interesting thought. You know, I think that it's developing, you know, it's growing, it's got its own trajectory. I don't know that I think that they'll get more rigid, but I do think that this thing about have everything having to be a discussion and, you know, a conversation about it, I think that's good. And I hope we keep that. And it, you know, like I said earlier, we're doing it. We're, you know, it's becoming a part of the program much earlier, at much younger age. You know, you'd think you could tell an 8-year-old no without having to explain why, but you do. I don't think that the pendulum will swing back. I think it just kind of goes, it'll never be the 50s again. That ship has sailed.
Switching gears a little bit then. So you were a camper stuck in cabin one for all those years.
Yes, several years.
For those who don't know, Charlie's famous for setting the world record of summer spent in cabin one. How many 5 years as a camper in cabin one?
It was 4 or 5 years in cabin one at least. And then,
which is for the youngest campers, because since his dad was an owner, he got to go to camp a little earlier than normal. And then you were in there till you were 11, 12.
Yeah, I think I did 7 to 12 in there or something like that.
And then you were a counselor in cabin one, and you still, to this day.
A few times I've been a counselor in cabin one.
You've still been in cabin one these last few summers. So you're still leading trips, and you've probably led over 100 trips, overnight trips into the Boundary Waters. What's it like taking the kids out, these phone-loving kids, out into the Boundary Waters?
Well, luckily,
without their phones.
Yeah, luckily, I don't think that the phone thing. You know, we kind of tune that out of them real quick there at the camp in a couple days, and they really do forget about them. I think they, because of the program, you know, we keep them rocking and rolling, you know, up and moving from here to there. And, you know, there's so much terrain to cover to get from the basketball court down to the mess hall. Yeah. You know, so by the time you get them out on the trail, I don't know that that's necessarily a thing, although there is always kind of this, you know, there is that time it takes to break them of it. And, you know, that first trip out on the trail, their first time on the trail, even every year they have to kind of get their sea legs back. And, I mean, we all do, even adults, you know, your first trip, as many times as I've done this, my first trip out is always a little rough around the edges. And, you know, you got to get used to that hard Grumman seat again. And, you know, your soft hands, you got to build up those calluses, and the water's cold and you don't want to get your feet wet.
You got to bend over while you're cooking for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's down on the ground and there's no comfy chairs. And, but that's part of the magic. And, you know, I think when we get them over that quickly and they get over it quickly, and then all of a sudden you realize that you're over it and you're a little indifferent to all that.
So being away from their phones isn't a big deal on the trips, but you did mention there's a process they go through. What does that look like day one versus day three versus day five?
Well, I think they refer to things that were on their phone, you know, the first few days. They're referring to things that were on their phone. You know, I was playing this game and this happened, or I, you know, did you see the video about this? You know, did you see the music video, this latest music video from whoever? And so I think the you know, the context of the conversation changes over that first few days from, you know, all the social media and things that they're, you know, games and music that they listen to. And they start to have more, you know, meaningful exchanges and less, I don't know what you would call that. I guess that's less.
Well, in the beginning, they're referencing video games and movies and shows, but towards the end, they're referencing the trip itself or more experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. They're talking about, you know, what's going on right in front of them instead of what they saw or heard.
And then they get to the end of the trip, and what's the group dynamics like? Got a group of four or five kids and you've had this 5-day overnight trip.
Yeah. You know, you get back and they're just running on all cylinders, man. And, you know, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch them come together and, you know, they become better friends and, you know, helping each other down the path, everybody picking up their own gear and taking care of their stuff. And you see that they feel the accomplishment of what they, being able to travel through the woods like that.
I saw you had Joey Stern in the canoe last year.
Yeah.
Actually, two years ago, I think he was only 8.
Yeah, he was 8, Stern in the canoe. He just turned 10. Well, he's a go-getter. And he has a great attitude. And he, usually everybody in the front of the boat is always wondering where you're going. So everybody's anxious to get in the back and learn to stern. Mm-hmm. He just was lucky. He got to be there early to do it, to learn early.
Plus he was on a trip with his dad.
Right.
Did you still have to scratch his back every night?
Yes, absolutely. He loves that.
Still?
Oh, yeah.
That a boy.
Every night and every morning.
Do you still like taking trips out there?
Absolutely. You know, it's not as easy as it used to be, but you know, I try not to move as fast. And obviously, you still got to paddle hard, but I'm a little less of a make miles type of guy now. And I'm a little more of a stop and fish and
smell the roses,
play in the rapids. Yeah, it's fun to get out there and do it, but I'm not trying to make the miles like I used to.
So sounds like you're not going to be leading the Wabakimi expedition this summer.
Well, I'll do whatever I can do to help. But yeah, I still don't, I don't mind going out and do that. I just all the kids aren't about it, aren't so much about miles until they get older, until they're in cabin 8 and 9, then they, then they're focused on it. And so I guess I'm always more concerned about the little guys having fun. And you think of a kid up there in the front of the canoe just paddling away for 11 miles a day, and you wonder, man, God, maybe I could have stopped and let this kid
Swim.
swim for a little while. So I do that now when I take them out. I try to read the crowd a little more and have a little less of expectations about what it is we're gonna go out there and do. I think you accomplish a lot sitting around a fire or sitting around a campsite for half a day. And then the other thing is that the campsites are harder to get. You gotta stop earlier. And it's gonna be windy every day, so you gotta determine if that wind is gonna make it a rough day for these guys and if they're still gonna have fun. And I think more about how to have fun on the trip and make the kids enjoy it. It makes me think about when I was coaching little guys in soccer or baseball out on the field here when my guys were here in town. And so for me, the goal was to make sure that they had fun out there, that they enjoyed coming out there so that they wanted to go to soccer practice. I was a little less worried about making sure that they know the basics, at these early ages. At that young age, you would just want them to learn to enjoy the sport and the activity and not be a battle when it's time to take them to practice. The fun part about coaching was watching the kids have a good time, and not so much for me was watching the kids have a good time and not so much making sure that they knew how to throw a baseball.
Yeah.
They'll get that eventually.
Yeah. It's like with fishing too. As a kid, I remember my dad always wanting me to catch a fish and loving when I catch a fish, and he would never fish himself. And I'm like, how can you do that? Like, you should fish too. And I thought, I'm never going to be that way. But now I am. I don't care if I catch anything. I think it's so much fun to watch those kids catch fish. I always stern. I sit in the back of the canoe, and I've got two kids in my canoe, and I just watch them fish all day and untangle their lines, and it's awesome.
Yeah, that seems to be the gig, but I agree completely that I'm not going to try and fish when I got two kids in the boat, because they need to, you got to work on their untangling their line and getting the hook out of their life vest and making sure that they don't hook each other in the head while they're casting and all that. So it does kind of take the fun out of it to be trying to fish and then get
Yeah.
your reel and keep yours out of the way when they. Then they snag your line. So, I'd rather help them have a good time. And it's, I think it's fun. Like you said, just sit there watching them, and God forbid they catch a fish, man. That's fun to watch.
Yeah. And you got to get a picture of it. Don't forget
Yep. Doesn't count if you don't get a picture.
that. What other tips do you have for if you got, say, a parent or a scout leader looking to take their kids out on a Boundary Waters trip or any trip, hiking, backpacking, canoeing?
Well, my first suggestion would be go to Camp Voyager and learn how to do
Shameless
it.
plug.
Well, we've really honed in on that for a long time, and I don't think you'd have to be going to the Boundary Waters to get that kind of experience, or you'd have to be hiking a mountain, and it's so we're talking, you'd be talking about, what you're talking about is actual camping, not car camping so much. And it's a little bit of a lost art, but you see how popular it is up there nowadays. So I like that. It's a lot more traffic, but seems like a lot more traffic these days up there. So I'm glad to see that other people are getting to do it too. But I guess, if I was going to give you advice, it'd be all the stuff that that we teach that I think that we do real well. And, you know, keep a pair of dry clothes no matter what. You know, wear your life vest, take your rain, make sure you take your rain gear, drink a lot of water, keep moving, keep it moving. Be careful, wear sunscreen, cover up from the bugs. You know, one thing I, nowadays that I'm older, I, like I said earlier, I try to make sure we're all having a little bit of fun while we're at it. You know, feel free to explore. You know, the route takes you around the triangle, but around the little triangle. But, you know, if you want, take a half a day and go check out the potholes along the way.
You mentioned car camping. Sure sounds a lot easier to me. So why do you think real, like wilderness camping, what you're referring to, or somewhere out in a big forest is more beneficial than going to a campground and setting up next to an RV or in an RV or in your backyard?
I think they both have, you know, their own allure. People are getting out and about and out in wilderness, and that's great, whether they're car camping or not. I mean, in both situations, but the Boundary Waters canoe trips or taking a big hiking trip across Isle Royale, it's a lot different of an experience. You got to get out, you know, you got to get out there and you got to carry your own stuff. You got to move yourself across the water. You got to, you know, you're not just going to hide in your RV and watch TV. You got to get out there and have a little bit of adventure. All those challenges you face out there on the trail, they become accomplishments throughout the trip. And obviously, you know, the first trip is harder, and but you still get the accomplishment, and then, you know, you get more used to it, you get better at it, and then the second trip is awesome, and it was fun, and you knew what you were doing a little more. And then that third trip is just like super fun, and you just had a blast, and you just made all sorts of memories. And, you know, by the time you've been out there two or three times in a summer, you kind of don't want to go back.
I think that's a good one to end on.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. I know I'm going to have you on again.
I imagine somewhere along the way.
We got a million topics. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
There's no better time than now to introduce a kid into the great outdoors. Be sure to visit the camp website, campvoyager.com, to learn about summer programming, read blog posts, and to order some gear. Follow camp on Instagram at camp_voyager. We'll see you next time on the trail.